Money Control presents Pitchcraft in collaboration with Seed to Scale.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Pitchcraft, the show where we deconstruct the pitch decks of some of India's most successful startups. A show that will help you craft that perfect pitch to investors. On this episode, we feature digital insurance unicorn ACCO. But first, what does ACCO do and what's been its journey so far? Let's find out. Digital insurance company ACCO started out as a general insurance startup that was founded in 2016. ACCO operates a fully digital platform that provides various types of insurance, from motor to health to travel and employee health insurance. While auto insurance was its leading product, it also has a good share in embedded insurance products like mobility and gadget insurance across digital consumer platforms like Amazon, Make My Trip, Ola, Urban Company, Bajaj Finance and others. In addition, ACCO covers millions of gig workers through partnerships with companies like Zomato and Swiggy. It recently forayed into life insurance with a focus on selling term plans. ACCO's USP is providing instant purchase options, cashless vehicle repairs, and doorstep claim settlement. Its co-founder and CEO Varun Dua previously co-founded CoverFox, an insurance distribution platform, unlike ACCO, which operates as a fully digital insurer. ACCO became a unicorn in 2021 when it raised $255 million in a Series D round of funding led by General Atlantic and Multiples PE at a valuation of $1.1 billion. ACCO's other investors include Amazon, Accel, Elevation, Ascent Capital, Intact Ventures, Munich Re, and Flipkart co-founder Binny Bansal, among others. Hey Varun, welcome to this episode of Pitchcraft. It's great talking to you about the ACCO story, the ACCO journey, but most importantly, the ACCO pitch deck. Does this ring a bell? When did you last see this document? When did you use it? Tell us about it.
I think it definitely rings a bell, but this is not even our logo now. This is how old it is. Yeah, and the last time I saw it was maybe a month ago when we were deciding to probably have this conversation. Hmm.
So tell us what went, you know, first of all, your journey as an entrepreneur, right? I mean, you spent a significant time in the insurance industry. You worked at Tata AIG, then you started up CoverFox, and then you started up ACCO.
Sure.
So, I mean, you had already established your credentials as an entrepreneur in the insurance space, someone who also has industry experience, which is crucial for a space that's regulated.
Yeah.
Did you really have to make this?
That's an interesting question because this was a big question in front of me and investors and our investors because CoverFox had a few investors. I think the main issue that we saw when we were running CoverFox, or at least I was trying to figure out how do we bring better solutions to end customers, was that as an aggregator who was providing various products from multiple insurance companies, you unfortunately don't end up controlling a bunch of things which are very important to customers. The price, for example, is definitely controlled by the manufacturer of the product. The claims experience, which is the moment of truth in insurance, that's when customers actually utilize the product. Otherwise, all you're selling is really a PDF. You know, that is again not in your control. And a bunch of these things led to a point where there's only limited value that you can add to the consumer until the manufacturer of the product actually tries to bring about the change. And this was the challenge that we saw and the opportunity that we saw when I was running CoverFox, that hey, we need to control the stack, we need to control what we deliver to consumers, price, product, features, claims experience. This is very critical. And this is not a product category which is, you know, you get habituated to maybe using a Zomato or using a Swiggy or, but these are very important decisions that customers take once or twice in their lifetime. They'll buy a life insurance or health insurance just once in their life. Right? You're not trying to go to an aggregator and shop every day for, you know, insurance. So actually delivering a great product, good trust, experience, claim the experience is very critical. and we thought it was better solved by manufacturing the product ourselves.
Right. Yeah. You know, for startups and entrepreneurs watching this show, you also had a very unique journey as an entrepreneur. You typically, when a startup or a founder feels like they need to do something different or, you know, an adjacency that they haven't cracked, they try to do it within the existing startup, right?
Yes.
But you left CoverFox and you decided to start up Akko.
Yeah.
You know, what was the thought process? Why did you feel like you had to leave one identity and adopt a completely different one?
Yeah.
Considering it was the same insurance space, you could always say that, you know, hey, we were aggregators, but now we are going to create the insurance product ourselves.
Sure. That's a tough question. In hindsight, it looks like this was the right way to go, but I can be honest and admit that that time this was an argument, like, or this was something that we were discussing, that how can we do it within the company that we were currently operating. Multiple reasons to it, actually. One, it's a regulated business, so it's a different licenses. The only way for us to distribute a license or aggregate a license is different from an insurance company license. So legally, you have to own one license. One company can't be doing both. So you end up maybe setting up a couple of subsidiaries, trying to do some complicated structure to make that work. All of these things were discussed, but more and more we interacted with the regulator, more and more we thought about what kind of conflicts it will create. It almost came to a point where if you had to use the same legal entity, you may anyways have to shut down what you were doing because you can't hold both those licenses. There were multiple, I think, dimensions to that argument. And long story short, after, I think, months of discussion, it was deemed that it's a better choice to start clean. Start afresh, have a legal entity which is created for the purpose of manufacturing. I would say even the regulator was more comfortable because they have to decide whether they will give this existing entity a license or a new entity a license. I think a lot of these factors went into that that particular decision. So I would not use the word left. I think this was a very calibrated, well-discussed decision which took almost about 18 to 24 months for me to transition. Set up a company, find a CEO for CoverFox, work with the board, and that's how the transition
right.
happened.
Akko, I think, became a unicorn in what, 2021?
Yeah.
And you raised your Series A in 2017.
Yes.
And I remember when it was announced in 2017, it was one of the biggest such Series A rounds. I mean, we had some crazy rounds happening in 2021, but in 2017, this was one of the biggest. It was a $30 million round, which you raised, I think, within a year of, you know, incorporating Akko. And, you know, the cap table was so interesting, right? You had Axel, you had Elevation, which was then still called Safe.
Yeah.
Then you had people like Narayan Murthy, Catamaran, Chris Gopalakrishnan. What did you do?
I don't think
apart from the pitch deck, which we will come to shortly.
I don't think raising 30 million was an aspiration. Let's do the biggest seed round or one of the biggest seed rounds in 2017. I don't think that was the aspiration. I think people or generally this is a media big seed round sort of narrative. We needed it. It's a balance sheet business and there's a regulatory requirement. You cannot set up an insurance company with $1 million. You know, it's just not possible.
Right. So this was that deck which helped Varun land his Series A round of funding way back in 2017. So, you know, take us through some of the slides, Varun, that you think were particularly important. You know, you start with the size of the market, where you size the market, the TAM, the problem, and so on. So when you crafted the problem statement, did this come from your experience of running CoverFox or working at Tata AIG before that? Because I'm sure the first question that you would have got, that these people would have asked you was, you know, what can you do that an ICICI, a Bajaj, a HDFC or a Tata cannot do?
Yeah. To answer your first question, I don't think it was one experience in CoverFox or something like one epiphany moment that said, hey, we should manufacture the product. I think it was collective experiences across maybe almost like a decade. I had worked in Tata AIG for about 5-6 years, then ran CoverFox for about 3 years. In between, I'd done also something on the software side for insurance. So it's a bunch of these things which led to the conclusion that, hey, this could be solved better. Yes, it was ambitious at that point in time with the kind of capital environment and the regulatory stance towards startups trying to do this, that hey, these are the big daddies, this is a big boys club, and this is not you know, you have the Tatas and the Bajajis and the Kotaks, you know, this is not for some fly by night, you know, startup operator to come in. And that I think was essentially the challenge. While they're great at what they do and they're very big names, they also face the classic, what would you call, the innovator's dilemma, right? They're so entrenched in their ways of working that it's very difficult for them to, you know, change tracks, and that was our opportunity. And I do believe that it needed somebody from ground up to re-architect the whole company structure, cost structure, ground up. And that's very difficult to do when you're already a 10,000 crore company.
Right.
So that was the point, that starting afresh, not having those legacy challenges that they are now facing, was really the opportunity.
How important in your mind is a deck like this for founders who are just starting out, who are trying to raise money? You know, what role does it play?
I think it's a good conversation starter. I think if it can pique interest, in my opinion at least, that it can only, I don't think it can directly land you an investment. But yes, it can.
But can it make or break a funding conversation?
I think yes.
Because it also reflects the clarity you have.
Absolutely.
What you're planning to do.
Yeah, it can make or break, because if you're not able to land with clarity what you're trying to do, at least I have come across, you know, multiple decks where there's so much to read or so much to understand that's so overwhelming. And that gets very tricky. So just distilling that deck to the 10...
So people try to pack in as much as possible.
A lot gets packed in. I would say I was like that. My first few decks, which I did in CoverFox, which was my first fundraise in life before ACO, were, if I look back at them now, I find them pathetic. Like, there's just like so much chaos, so many points. You have a lot of ideas as a founder or an entrepreneur, and you want to land like all of them. It's just like, I would say there's this deluge, this is vomit of ideas. and it just doesn't land, because you are seeing the problem from 50 different angles and you're seeing opportunity everywhere. But that doesn't mean they're all doable now, all those things are doable now. And that's really maybe not even the core thesis. So for the investor to really understand what's the angle, what's the opportunity, I think clarity of thought helps, and the deck really reflects whether you have that clarity of thought. Or maybe it also kind of permeates into your
execution.
So how
did you evolve from a vomit of ideas to something very specific? Because if you pick up your deck today, I'm sure you'll say that, you know, hey, this is 90% of what we've done in the last 5 years.
Yes. I learned, I would say, over a period of time.
From investors, from colleagues, from rivals?
From everyone. I think there were pitches that I've made in the past which have been rejected. I've read a lot. Online, I've seen decks of companies who have done exceedingly well. Just trying to get that clarity of thought, that why am I not able to craft the story, or what should I do to craft the story?
Pitch craft, as we call it.
Craft the story better. I think over a period of time, at least, I've learned that, you know, there are, it's just fairly simple, right? There are 10-15 things that you want to say broadly, and when you actually list them down. I think a formula that's worked for me, you list down the 15-20 things without any order, without any, it's just like these are 15-16 things going on in my head. What can I cut out? What's not so important? If I have to take a very harsh call and say, hey, these 3, 4, 5 points are okay, I can just let them be. They're important, but not like super important. Are some of those areas overlapping, repetitive? It just tends to happen. Like, this is the way we think as humans, right? Some, you're trying to land the point in various angles, and some of it tends to get repetitive. So you have a laundry list of things you want to say. Some things are repetitive or less important. Then you say, you decide in what order do I need to tell them, you know, so that the story kind of adds up. And when you just keep cutting, I think the only job is to cut out what is not important. That's what at least I learned. That's what worked for
this
me.
This is like editing a story, right? I mean, you write the first draft and then you just keep.
I think if you can land your 2-3 core points and make people see the opportunity, I think that helps.
Right. And in terms of the order of slides, again, you said that, you know, in no particular order, you would have a list of 15 things that must go in the deck.
Yes.
But in terms of the order, you know, I mean, you started with the size of the market, the problem, then, you know, there is a phase one where you talk about how we win the auto market and so on. So again, was there a method to how you sort of came up with the order of the slides or the order of the deck? Yeah. Where you start with a big picture and then you kind of drill down to the specifics and end with who's actually going to do the work?
Yes, it's a fairly simple framework or thesis. Say that, is that market large enough that you're chasing? I personally truly believe that there is no point chasing a small market or a small problem. Or maybe at least it doesn't lend well to venture investing.
They always look at TAM.
No, they're in the business, the investors are in the business of, you know, having outsized outcomes. If your market itself is restrictive, then that dollar doesn't go to work in the right place, right? Then you're better off not raising money and running a boutique business, which is okay. There's respect in that, but there's no point trying to make a small market business venture investable. It just usually doesn't have great outcomes because they're at loggerheads, right? You want a market which is huge. So I think in terms of the deck, we wanted to first land, not that it's an unknown, but the fact that the India market's growing and it's huge. Insurance is not a small small market. Okay, everybody accepts that insurance is a big market. Then the next is, what are we trying to solve? You know, what is unsolved in that market, or where is the opportunity in that market? And then how are we going to go about doing it? I think that's the simple.
Right. Do you want to take us through the standout slides for you? And how involved were you, Varun, in designing this, you know, writing down some of these points?
I think it was important for us to capture what the problem is, you know, very clearly. Because today you can get your car insurance or bike insurance, there are 20 players. We were probably the 25th or 24th insurance company. So it's not like today you can't buy insurance or your needs are not getting met. But are they getting met effectively? How do consumers look at it? And is there an opportunity to solve that? I think that's what we were trying to do with, for example, this particular slide. This says 2015 because we were in 2016 at that point. So you have these 20 odd companies with the large brand names, right? HDFC, Tata, Bajaj, all of these guys. But if you look at it, when you look at the market structure, I would even today ask you as a consumer, can you clearly say that for your car insurance, you know, ICICI has better services or Bajaj is cheaper, or, you know, this is the highlight of this company? You can't, right? Like, it's all commoditized, you know. It's very price driven, you know.
It also depends on the relationship they have with dealers
or agents. So it's distribution led, it's commoditized, it's price driven, there is no brand preference. We've all struggled with at the point of claim. You can ask anybody, even today that's true. I would say that story would even play out today. When you generally ask anybody about insurance, and I'm taking ACO into the fold here, is claiming an insurance easy? It's delightful, or is it hassle-free? The answer is no. You know, we all have a very negative, as consumers, a very negative perception that claiming insurance is hard or is complicated. Pura paisa nahi milta hai. I don't get the calculation, you know, or they're delaying. And so on and so forth. So when you look at it, the problem that we were trying to really land here was that it's a fragmented market, nobody's standing out. You know, it really depends on whether you are able to push your distributors more or have more tie-ups with car dealers. Your product is commoditized. The customer doesn't care whether he's buying from you or A or B or C. It's the right time, right place, who got hold of you from a sales standpoint. This is also leading to high costs because distributors in the middle are getting paid a lot to give you this access to the customer. And when it's the point for claiming, no customer is really excited about going through that process.
I think you've said that the apathetic services that you're trying to, and you decided to solve that. That would come in the next slides, right?
Yeah. So
you've stated the problem.
Yeah. What we were attempting to do was, that we were trying to first take one market. You know, it's also, I think, very critical from a any startup's life. I would say there are many things to do in insurance or many things to do in fintech or whatever sector you're in. But I think we were quite clear that we'll take one market,
which is auto.
The auto, and start with that market. And that's why there's a phase one, phase two in our deck, saying that the first few years maybe we're just focused on, you know.
Again, how did you take that call that you would go after this? Is it because it's a standard product? You had experience in underwriting such products before?
No, so I think it's a great question, and it's a fairly simple answer when you look at it from outside. So this is a when you talk about the three big pieces of where customers put their money into insurance is car, bikes, health and life, right? This is what customers buy. Health and life are very considered purchases, right? You want to trust the brand. I think if I start selling you life insurance as a new brand, you may love my product, but you'll be like, I don't know this company. Like, who are they? So health also is a far more considered, you know, decision. But auto is a less considered decision. It's a decision in which you're optimizing for price and service. So it's a very simple equation. I want a cheap product. I don't want to be troubled at the point of claims. And if I don't like you, I'll switch to somebody else next year. You know, so it's not a long-term commitment from the customer. Health and life are very long-term commitments from the customer. Also, this product has a deadline. You know, because by law, you have to renew your insurance depending on your expiry date and so on and so forth. So it's more high velocity. It's easier for customers to take that decision. So if you catch them at the right time, you have a good proposition, good price, there's a high chance of you converting the customer compared to, let's say, probably starting with health, where one, there's no deadline, the customer can procrastinate the decision.
So which slide were investors most sold on when you know, took them through your presentation? Was it, you know, your business model, the fact that you're direct to consumer, which wasn't done before? Was it the problem statement itself? Maybe because some of these investors had, you know, faced the same problem, or they thought it was ripe for disruption. Or it was the team, the fact that all of you knew the industry, all were not some, you know, techies suddenly starting up in insurance. All of you put in time in a sector which can be very complicated and regulated and so on and so forth. Which slide do you think worked magic for you?
Yeah, I'll then probably take you to the next slide, because really this is the thesis of the business, right? Like car insurance, because that was the first focus area for the company. It's a commodity product, right? People, you're always trying to save money on car insurance. It's just a global phenomenon. It's just a, you know, maybe on health or life, you're like, hey, I want better coverage. I want, you know, if I go to the top notch hospital, also everything should be covered, you know. So you're really trying to get value from your product. Whereas car insurance is standard. You have an accident, it pays you for the accident. It's a fairly simple product. And partly it's also regulatorily driven, right? Like it's a compliance driven product. So price plays an important role for customers. Price plus reliability, that at the point of time of claim, please don't trouble me. Now reliability can happen only over time. You know, did investors believe that as a new age company, we would deliver a better, far more seamless experience to customers at the point of claim? They believe that if you take a fresh approach, just an app-based approach, you know, it's easy to see where your claim is, your bill is, you know, you can press a button, somebody comes, picks up your car, will we be able to deliver that? Probably the answer was, okay, if you take a new approach, I think the experience will build over time, and the reliability will build over time as the brand sort of permeates and becomes bigger and has more consumers. But really, I think what the investors were focused on, or what we were also trying to do in the business, was saying that if price is important to people or to customers in this category, you need to have a cost structure where you can actually deliver the product at a cheaper price.
And you know, highlighted that by saying that if on your product, you'll end up saving a flat
roughly 15%. Most customers would save. And where and why would we be able to save money compared to a traditional insurer's operation? In the claims, how would we be better? In the customer acquisition cost, why would we be better? And I think there were solid reasons behind it. And once probably that they saw that, yes, you know, insurance companies have to pay commissions every year for the same customer. Once the customer comes to me and renews, I don't have to pay commissions. Okay, so I start saving money there. Believable, right? Like, yes, it's going to be hard for you to acquire the first customer, but you don't have to pay every year.
So you heard out from Varun on what he believes was the standout slide in the ACCO deck. But what did his investors think of it? We're going to get one investor to talk about it on the other side of PitchCraft. Welcome back. With Varun, we have Abhinav Chaturvedi from Axel. You know, tell us about your relationship with Varun and ACCO, because you guys were also an investor in his previous startup, CoverFox. So how did it evolve, the relationship from CoverFox to ACCO? And we'll delve into the deck after that.
Well, firstly, very nice to be here. And you know, my relationship with Varun goes back a long way. I remember the first time I spoke to Varun was in 2014. And my son was just very, very small. In fact, my son was in my lap. And I think we Skyped on the laptops or something. So he was in Bombay, I was in Bangalore. And I was going in and out because I had my son in my lap. And we were trying to figure out like what this business is.
This was CoverFox.
This is CoverFox.
The previous one.
This was this was CoverFox. And you know, the good thing was we have looked at that space in the past. So we could get up to speed very, very quickly.
The insurance.
The insurance distribution space. We have looked at the space in the past, and we could also identify that Varun knew what he was really talking about, because he was able to figure out like what the real problems in the distribution space was and what his right to win was as CoverFox. And so, you know, it started as a, you know, like a Saturday call actually with Varun, and that concluded into a relationship between Accel and CoverFox at that point in time. And while running CoverFox, there was this thing that we are building a large business, but Varun was always constantly trying to figure out like, are we really solving a true problem here? And the seed of the problem was, we are distributing products which weren't really innovated upon for a long period of time. And to him, it seemed like a constant issue that there's more to be done in this industry, and I'm just solving a very limited part of the problem. And to that end, sort of we worked together, you know, with Varun and team to come up with what should be this large possibility where we can actually solve for the consumer pain point, which is actually build an insurance product which the consumer really wants, and we can really price the risk for the consumer. So that was the sort of the seed of the idea, started by Varun, and quite frankly, it was hard to do. You know, he had a business which was a going concern, the company was doing well, we had lots of people in the organization, and that he himself had hired, and it was doing well. And so he was thinking of a new thing which was a much larger opportunity. But to achieve that, there were lots of mountains to climb in between. The first is sort of he's already a going concern, so he needs to figure out sort of how to transition out of that. Second, starting an insurance business requires a lot of money. So he ended up, you talked about $30, $40 million as a seed stage round, which was unheard of at that point in time. Third, there was never a previous instance of venture-backed company which has received a general insurance license. So it was something which was not really done before. And there could have been easier things, which I keep telling him that you could have done by sort of, you know, in life. But he always was looking to do something which is much larger. And that has continued since then, so last 10 years. So you see, we started with general insurance, which is starting with auto insurance. And now we are into life insurance business as well. So there is an ambition guiding all of this to build a very large business. But it's not just a business, it's to solve for a consumer pain point which has not been done according to Varun.
So in a sense, you backed Varun. Did the deck really play a role? Is that something that you even looked at? Because you knew him from before and you know what his vision and ambitions were, and you essentially bet on him. So how important, Abhinav, was the pitch deck for you?
Well, specifically in ACCO's case, it's not very important, because a pitch deck is a way of getting to know the founder. The most important thing when we look at a pitch deck is we are reading the founder through this literature. And what that means is, you know, the clarity of thought, the insight, the unique insight, you know, one has about the market. It also shows about the level and the level of finesse a founder can have in presenting the ideas together. A significant majority of people who come and pitch to us want to say everything in the limited time we have.
Like what he said, like, right? Yeah. This was an issue that he also had initially.
And in most cases than not, by the end of the conversation, one is more confused than when it started was, right? So what is very important
less
is...
Less is more, essentially.
And you know, the clarity also doesn't come from saying less. Clarity comes from knowing a lot and figuring out what to say and what not to say. So it requires work. It's not like lack of work. It requires a lot of work. Hmm. And then you get to the other side where you say, hey, this is important, the rest of it's not. And that prioritization is very important, not just for pitching to investors, but also for running your business. Because, you know, if the chief decision maker in a business is confused, then everybody else around him is also confused.
Abhinav mentioned clarity of thought, Varun, and you know, if I go through your, you know, this Series A pitch deck, right? It talks about the general insurance market, but it very specifically talks about how to win the auto market. It doesn't talk about auto health, you know, gadget, life, so on and so forth. So in your mind, did you always know that it's going to become this, it's going to play in multiple industries? Or did you, you know, drill down to auto at that point? I just want to understand how it eventually evolved, ACCO.
Sure. So I would just say that founder's aspiration is always to, most founders I would like to say, is much larger than what is visible on the pitch deck, right? But it works both ways. If I were to, let's say, for imagination, put in this pitch deck that we want to be a auto insurance company, a life insurance company, a health insurance company, a gadget insurance company, an asset management company. We want to set up our own garages which can do captive experience for customers. The both ways it cuts, right? The investor is like, what are you saying? It's just not going to happen, right? It's just not going to work. What are you trying to do, right? Like, you can't win these 10 big battlefronts. You know, you just don't know what you're talking about. You have to win something to get the right to win the next thing, right? And that actually also plays out in execution. In my head, I always knew that if we get the first thing right, then that gets us the trust of both the consumer and the investor to do the next thing, you know? But I can't litter the deck with everything. It just doesn't make sense to people, right? If somebody comes in, like, I'm going to conquer the world in one pitch deck, and I'm going to beat LIC also and ICICI, it just doesn't make any sense, right?
For the founders listening in, the first act should in itself be a large business so that we don't have to believe that, hey, there's an act two and act three to follow. And what that does is it provides you time and space to build out one business at the same time. Sow the seeds for Act 2 and Act 3 over time. And in most cases, you use the same consumers which you have for Act 1 to sell multiple products through Act 2 and Act 3.
Varun took us through what he believed, you know, were standout slides according to him. What stood out for you as an investor? I mean, in your case, you didn't actually need the deck. Yeah. But, you know, for the benefit of other investors who perhaps came into that round, because you had some marquee entrepreneurs coming in, what do you think stood out for you?
Yeah, so maybe just the most important thing is to zero in on what you're doing. So he's not building a general insurance business. He was building an auto insurance company to start with. So I think just zeroing in on the sequencing, what you're doing. Because, you know, he could have sat with us
and then a tech-enabled auto insurance.
So I think, but just like zeroing in on what we are doing and not this is a life insurance plus a health insurance plus an auto insurance plus everything else. And I'll become a bank also at some point in time and so on and so forth. So it wasn't that, right? So it was a very sharp focus on auto insurance business, which was very clear to start with. The second thing is we were very clear sort of it's the large market. So that wasn't really a piece of concern. In some of the companies that we look at, and the majority concern sometimes is that, are we really doing something which is a very large opportunity? Because there's one realization which we've had, and this is for us and this is for founders as well. Building a few $100 million business is as hard as building a few $1 billion business. So why would you build a few $100 million business? So build the larger one. And so therefore it is very, very important to choose the Act 1 very carefully. So in this case, I think it was very clearly chosen as what the auto insurance business is. The second thing is there is this slide where we clearly carve out what the insight is, which is basically this, the pricing ability and sort of how
spoke about. Right?
Yeah, the clear insight about, we know what you're doing, we know it's a large market, but how
but
do we really win it? Yeah, how do we really win it? Like, what's
your
unique insight to win this market? Why can't other people do it? And is this like a ephemeral time being advantage, or is it going to be a long-term advantage for us, right? So this clearly lays out, like this particular piece of information, this clearly lays out what's our right to win in this market. And if things were to play out in the way we have imagined it to be, there is a chance that we can win, and we can win big.
And were you also building a thesis around this space at that time? Because, I mean, there are a couple of, you know, American companies which were in this space, not in the same form, but trying to do similar things where they sell directly to consumers.
Yes, all the while. Mm-hmm. So while we were together...
So were you looking like an Indian equivalent of that?
We weren't exactly trying to frame it like that. While we were working at CoverFox, we realized that the bigger opportunity is building products. And that idea did come from Varun. And once we realized that that's really the big opportunity and not in distribution, we did see that, like, what's the right way to build it. And there are some parallels in terms of business models in different parts of the world where they have, there is some kind of a proxy to do that and realize a lot of value in doing that. So we had some understanding of sort of how these businesses work. And so it wasn't something that we didn't know about. We had reasonable understanding of it. Having said that, Indian markets are different, and every market is different. So there is nuances in sort of how things work and you know, how this business would be for India. And so those all played out, like, after we invested, not before we invested.
Got it. Anything else that stands out for you, Abhinav?
I think the other thing which I want to talk about is the team which Varun is able to build. And it's a hard thing to build a team.
What's out for me in the team is, you know, all of them had put in time in their respective industries, a lot of them from the insurance industry. So how did you kind of convince them to join? Because startups were not that hot then.
Yeah, so...
Especially an InsurTech startup.
Yeah, I think, you know, I have spent more time trying to hire than to pitch to investors.
That's also a pitch.
That is a pitch, you know. In fact, maybe you should have a program on hiring early employees.
That's not a bad idea.
Early employees, because it's probably harder, you know. See, the investors have, you know, here they're trying to play a large sector, okay, insurance, maybe whatever, payments or something or the other, and there are some themes which make sense to them. But a good talented, you know, sort of employee or a person has hundreds of opportunities, right? Like, not one. And it's very hard for them to build conviction in somebody and say, hey, I'm going to quit my cushy job and, you know, try and take a risk with you. So some of the folks here I knew. So I think every startup or every founder starts like that. There are 3-4 people who they trust, who trust them. You kind of somehow are able to cobble them up.
Or you look at your alumni network.
Yeah, somewhere or the other. But there are some hard hires. Like, as an insurance company, we needed a CFO and an actuary by law, by regulation. And we needed that technical domain expertise. And these were people working in large companies. So I must have maybe had 20 cups of coffee, 10 lunches, you know, just trying to, you know, convince why it's good for them to bet their career with us. It takes a while. Yeah.
And the hard part in this one is, you have to have this all in place to apply, right? When you apply to the regulator, you need to have, some of these folks signed up because you have to submit that in the application.
Yeah, you can't run an insurance company without an actuary or a CFO. They won't give you a license.
So you basically have no business. Yeah. You are raising $30 million plus dollars. You're doing something which has not been done before. You're hiring people without a business. And you know that the license is going to take at least 1.5 years.
Yeah.
Right? So you have to keep all these people engaged for 1.5 years. And they have to quit before you get the license. So it's just like you need a different order of resourcefulness to get, like, all these people in and work when there is no business.
So that's the slide that stood out for the team?
Yeah, because it's...
What about the last one on the licenses that they have or they will potentially have?
Yeah, I think this one you're saying?
Yeah.
I think this was this was a bet we were taking along with Varun that if things were to work out, this is how it will look like. And so it is important for knowing some kind of timeline to how things would pan out and when things would pan out. So we committed even before 2016, sometime in 2016.
And you launched your product in 2018.
Yeah, it took us about, so I think the journey before that is it took us about 15 months prior to applying. This slide talks about November 2016 as the time when we applied to the regulator. For 15 months prior to the application, I was going and talking to the regulator that allow us to apply. Because they had never seen a, like Abhinav spoke about it, they had never seen a venture-backed.
General insurance.
They had just not seen a venture-backed insurance company. They were like, I don't know who you guys are. Why should we give you a license? And our only pitch to the regulator was that if you do not allow younger teams, different forms of capital to come in, we are not going to see anything new. And I think that argument also didn't land in one conversation. There were maybe, I think, eight, nine conversations over a year plus when they said, okay, chalo, apply, we'll look at it.
What, Varun, what would your advice be to, I don't know, entrepreneurs in general and fintech or insurtech entrepreneurs in particular when it comes to crafting a pitch deck?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't qualify this as a fintech or a insurtech or I'll come to that later, but I think any new initiative, any new idea, any new business, if you cannot encapsulate it in 10 clear slides, maybe max 12, that's my yardstick. Even internally, if the team is presenting to me a new idea, if it's like just going on, it's just like you lose interest, you just don't know what you're trying to say. So I think just distilling with clarity in 10 to 12 slides, somebody can flip it on the phone and understand what you're saying, even if they're, you know, just walking around and flipping on the phone and they get it. And there's interest in that. I think that, and I'll take a cue from what Abhinav said, that takes a lot of work. It's easy to have garbled slides. It's very tough to have those 10 crisp, crystal clear slides. It takes maybe something like this would have probably been our 8th or 10th iteration. I don't remember now, but I definitely would say that would be an 8th or 10th iteration.
After cutting out the...
Cutting out, clarity, how do we visually... represent it. I can say the same things in bullet points, but how do I get that visual representation so that, you know, it's just that penny has to drop. If that penny doesn't drop, you know, it's just like everybody's busy. You know, you need to capture someone's attention before you can maybe have the next conversation, right? You need to look good on the first date for the next conversation to happen. So I think that's one. Second, I think more in terms of insurtech or fintech, I think I have seen many, or at least we are witnessing now, quite a few businesses which play in the regulatory gray zone. And we've seen, you know, constant trying to then catch up to regulations. And anybody who's in the fintech or insurtech space, at least we've learned, we, you know, probably didn't have an option, so we went down that road. But trying to operate in regulatory gray zone and not having clarity or using lawyers to prove that you are not in the regulatory gray zone, I think it's both for investors and for founders that in the financial services space, I think it's much better to comply and take the hardest route from day one and have crystal clarity on how you're going to operate from a regulatory standpoint, because it just comes back to...
Otherwise, some circular can come back to bite you.
Yeah, just don't operate
when
in the gray zone.
You're too big to deal
just
with
don't
it.
And I do believe that lots of lawyers give you wrong advice.
Abhinav?
I'll tell you something else. I mean, we talked about clarity. See, the most important thing for the founder when they come and see us is number one, to be just themselves, like authentic. And it's very hard. For us, our job is to meet founders. So we meet founders every day. But for the founders, like if you look at it inverse, it'll be a sparse opportunity, especially if you're starting out, right? And so there is this tendency to get like anxious, and it's like an important meeting and so on and so forth. And so far as that is concerned, like for us, like the most important thing is to make sure the founder is comfortable. But I would like the founder to be just authentic, to be himself or herself, just be normal. If they are not okay in English, it's okay to use Hindi. They don't need to be Shakespearean or use Shakespearean language or whatever, like to impress us or something. The more themselves they are, the better it is. And that's better because they are closer to sort of how they'll build the business. So one is number one, to be authentic. Second, I think we covered a bunch of things about having clarity, having insight, being resourceful. I think having something like this is very helpful, especially if you don't know the investor. If you're new to the investor, because it's a way in which the investor will sort of look at you without you being there. And it's a great way to put your best foot forward without you being in the room. And I think the first focus should be on the content and not on formatting. That like you don't need to like do like crazy formatting or something, but just make sure like it's like literature, which is simple language, but just like means something. It has depth. And then I think if you have time, you can make great formatting, etc. But the content should be nice. It should flow. It should be coherent. It should be crisp. There's no point to be redundant and so on and so forth. It has to come from inside of you. Right? It has to come from some personal experience.
Got it. Right? If there was one thing that you would change about this deck, what would it be?
No, I don't mean to say that.
I can answer that question. Sure, I'll change the. We had a big fight on this
ACCO
name. Yeah. And I remember Varun calling me up and saying, "Hey, I decided this is ACCO. What do you think about it?" And I said, "It's like really bad." And like, why?
So Varun, what was the process?
You know, I have a very different view. I said that you can put meaning into any name.
ACCO actually doesn't
mean anything.
Is it some Greek or some
nothing?
Nothing
think we
for wisdom
something.
Or something like that.
No,
nothing.
We just wanted something that consumers would find it easy to remember. And when we put our brand and marketing effort into it, it should ring a bell. And there was some. We thought it had legs. That's about it. You know, so I told Abhinav, we'll make it work. I don't think, you know, I'm not saying it's a great name or a good name or a bad name. I don't know, but I think we can make it work because it's small, it'll stick, and you know.
It also doesn't tie you down to a particular line of business if you have to.
Absolutely. I'm just sort of digressing on one more thing with which at least I have learned when pitching to investors is, it's okay to say I don't know, you know, to a particular question. I think I have seen very, you know, when I meet some younger founders now who've come to me, they're just in general chat or conversation, and if you probe a little or just try and ask a question, you know, they get defensive. Like, there's an answer. They have to. Like, it's okay. I don't know. I don't know whether it'll play out or not play out. Like, that's the risk we're taking, you know? I think that's very important to say, hey, this is what we know. This is a high probability, but yeah, for certain, we don't know.
Sometimes
it's okay to say, I don't know, and this is what we're trying to solve.
On that note, thank you very much, Varun and Abhinav, for taking us through the ACCO pitch deck, deconstructing it. Lot of insights packed into this episode, but guess what? You can also access the full deck. Just log in to seedtoscale.com. Thank you very much for watching.
Money Control presents Pitchcraft in collaboration with Seed to Scale.